Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Everybody, I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to ANCAST. We haven't done one of these shows in a while. Extremely excited to have these guys back on the show. It's our Funimation episode. It's been a long time, but we're joined here today by the Senior Manager of Social Strategy and Development, Justin Rojas. The face, I would say, the face of Funimation is Justin Rojas. Hey. Justin, thanks for coming on.
Hey, welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. We are also joined by our other favorite Funimation person, Jennifer Fu, Brand Manager. Jennifer, thanks for coming on the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You've got all the in-depth, you know, the real nerdy answers. That's you.
This is true.
Which is what our readers crave, I would say. But let's go ahead and get into these questions here. First, how are you guys doing today?
Staying busy.
It's a busy time over here at the office, as usual. I don't think there's a lull ever anymore.
This is supposed to be the lull.
This is supposed to be busy time.
Is supposed to be summer. This is supposed to be the lull. Yeah.
You know, we're dealing with the same thing. You would think that the spring, like a late winter, early spring, would be sort of a calm time in the anime industry, but it is full of excitement right now. You guys are heading into a gigantic spring, like a really big spring, right?
I'm not going to say colossal.
That's an understatement probably at this point.
Right. Remind everybody, Justin, if you could, why spring is so big.
Spring is going to be a pretty big season for us at Funimation. There's a lot of returning shows coming to not just us, of course, but many people. So there is a little show that has been announced, season 2 is coming out, that no one's really been waiting around for very long, called Attack on Titan.
Right.
There's also season 2 of My Hero Academia. And then, Jen, tell us theatrically what we got coming up.
Your Name, which is, I can't do the sarcasm thing as much, officially the number one highest grossing anime film worldwide of all time. Kind of a pretty awesome record. That's going to be coming out to theaters in the US and Canada April 7th, and we're super excited about that. That's really going to be one of the biggest things that we've put out theatrically in a while that I can think of.
And not to mention, we finally launched our new Funimation site and Funimation Now, and that's getting its whole overhaul is there, and that's a big deal for us too internally.
Right. That's been in the works for quite some time.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. So you got Attack on Titan season two of My Hero Academia, which I think those two properties are definite, like second like to Dragon Ball, maybe.
Yeah, that's the one I didn't touch on yet. But yeah, it's been I didn't say Dragon Ball because it's already been happening.
Yeah.
But we finally did get the rights for Dragon Ball Super.
Mm-hmm.
And that started, it's been streaming, obviously, but it started its run on Toonami, the English dub of that. And that's a big deal, and that's going to keep going for quite a while. So we're ramping up for all of that.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's like every major property, like every giant cash cow in the anime industry will have fresh fresh
and
material.
And we just did the One Piece movie also, so it's like, it's nonstop.
Yeah, yeah, but that equals, I would imagine, very long days, busy times, busy times. So we always ask this right out of the gate. We want to know, in 2016, what sold really well on Blu-ray? Like, what, you know, people have things that they'll expect, like, you know, Dragon Ball movies and stuff like that. But what performed really well for you in 2016 on DVD and Blu-ray?
Sure. Yeah, I love talking about this one particularly. So bestsellers, I'll go ahead and split it into movies and TV series because I think that just makes it a little bit easier. Boy and the Beast did phenomenally for us after we had our theatrical run, which, you know, I think a lot of fans know was the type of theatrical run where it's running for several days at a time rather than just an event style type thing. So that did amazing for us. The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, actually, you know, originally came out from Bandai. We put it out again Japan, you might expect, well, maybe that wouldn't sell so well on the second go through, but that totally wasn't the case. That also did really well for us. And then on the live action adaptation movie front, Attack on Titan live action movies, those have sold phenomenally. And then also very close to my heart, the Rurouni Kenshin live action movies, really high quality adaptations that are very faithful to the original. Those have also been doing very, very well. And they just came out. They started coming out, I think it was November, December, January. So they're already, even despite having not been out for very long in 2016, they're already some of our top sellers for the year.
That's really, you know, that's really good to hear, because the talk around those Kenshin movies, because they've been out for like 4 years or something like that. Like, they're not new films. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they took a while to come out here in the States. So to hear that they're immediately selling really, really well, that's great. And I guess it speaks to that there's not always that urgency. It's not always an urgent thing where you have to get it out right away. You can take your time on some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the level of quality those movies are. I mean, it might have even done better for it, because people have, you know, it's one of those things where Japanese cinema it's a slow burn in the United States. So maybe even those years built up the hype enough that people finally are aware it exists and now it's finally available.
Although I'm a little like it's I guess it's sort of inevitable and not at all a surprise that the live action Titan movies did well. But I mean, you know, speaking as in my position as a writer, someone who works for an anime news site, like, we really like the reception that those films got was like, I was really positive on the first one. I was like, this is so cool. It's so unique and different. But I was fighting a tsunami of like people mad at those movies for not being what they wanted them to be. So to hear that they sold well, I guess that's not a surprise, but also like, I'm a little like, well, but it felt like people really had problems with those movies. Like, that's most of what I heard.
I think that's, you know, anytime you change source material, it becomes quite the debate, especially within the anime fan base. We've got very passionate fans, which is great for our industry. But then also on the flip side, you have, you know, they're very critical, but people still enjoy content. I think, I'm not going to say this like in a negative sense, but I think some of this audience will still buy things they don't particularly like.
Yeah, well, either that or like the rhetoric, not the rhetoric, but the tone of online conversation often is extremely heightened. So somebody might be like, like super pissed at this movie on the forum or whatever, and then they're like in the store and it's $15 and they're like, I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how it goes. Besides that, moving on.
Yeah. Going into TV series, Tokyo Ghoul Season 2, I think that's probably not a surprise to anybody else.
Yeah.
New season of High School DD did very well. In terms of some somewhat newer titles, as in like non-continuing franchise, Assassination Classroom, we knew that did very well on streaming. It ended up doing very well on Blu-ray and DVD. Seraph of the End, really the same case there. And I'm saving one, again, kind of dear to me as well, Death Parade. Only been out for a couple months, doing very, very well.
Nice.
I think that's part of that is, of course, the content is pretty different. It's very, very cool, very edgy. But then also the collector's edition that we had going out for it, this like elevator style box. I'm not sure if you or some of the readers or listeners have seen it yet, but it's kind of a conceptual release similar to the Japanese one. And I think that's helped to move units there as well.
Yeah, no, I love that show. And you did that box is really cool. It's really nice. You did a nice job on that one. Do you have any unexpected? I guess some of those are a little unexpected, maybe. But anything where it's like, well, we didn't really expect this to perform as well as it did.
So I can speak to that a little bit. Generally, I think that we saw things pretty much in line with what we were expecting. I think that there are a couple things that stand out there. In terms of some of the license rescues that we had, like Haruhi and Code Geass and Escaflowne, we were expecting good numbers for those, and that happened. But one thing that we sort of weren't expecting was that the collector's editions actually did very, very well for those in a way that we weren't expecting. So I think it was for Haruhi and Code Geass, Both of their collector's editions were unavailable at a lot of retailers by street date because they had gone through their allotments. So we ended up having to reprint, and that was a very, very good feeling.
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Right.
And then in terms of, you know, I was looking at some of the past performance we had. In terms of something that was sort of surprise, a title, Lord Marksman and Vanadis, that one I was kind of surprised to see the numbers for that were pretty good. The streaming for that had also been good, but I think that, you know, I bring that up as an example because it's something that, you know, we don't necessarily see tons of fans talking about all the time, but the audience is there. They're definitely watching. They're definitely buying. And so that's one that stood out as well.
Right. Yeah, that was one of those shows where it wasn't necessarily generating a lot of discussion or a lot of hype or anything, but it was absolutely performing well streaming. And we saw that with the traffic, like on our weekly reviews of it. Like, you know, we have our own sort of, well, what are people actually reading, you know, in terms of our reviews? And that was one of those. It's like, I guess people are into this one. Like, they're not really talking about it, but they're definitely reading. Well, that's cool. That's really interesting. Now that we've kind of talked about some of these bestsellers, I want to talk about Funimation's business kind of as a whole, because we saw what feels like a pretty major shift last year in your business overall. A big partnership with Crunchyroll was announced, wherein the simulcast season, so the every 3 months there's 30 new shows or whatever. The day and date simulcast of those shows will be handled by Crunchyroll, and then the simuldubs, which come out about a week or two later, will be handled basically by Funimation. This is very different from how it was for years, where Crunchyroll and Funimation would compete with exclusive simulcast licenses. I'm curious, how has life around the office changed since this partnership, and how much has your business really changed as a result of this partnership?
You know, it's interesting because it seems like it is a big partnership. It's a huge partnership. But it actually hasn't impacted us on a day-to-day level at the office very much. It's pretty much business as usual, really, because the nature of our business, for one thing, changes happen all the time. Like this, again, I've been at this company for almost 9 years, and every year has been pretty much completely different. So it's hard to say there's even a standard at this point. Just the anime industry and stuff has changed so much. So, and we're really operating as independent companies, anyway. It changes some of the operational things in regards to deliveries and, you know, uploads and things like that. But pretty much the day to day is the same for the most part.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that to a lot of fans, it does seem like it's pretty significant. But in terms of what we're handling just in the Funimation office, you know, we're still doing all our home video. We're doing brand management. We have theatrical. We have to create assets for everything that we're doing, from trailers to packaging and everything else. We're working with a lot of our different partners like Netflix, et cetera. So not to trivialize simulcast at all, of course. But, you know, that was one slice of everything. And we still do simulcasts. We still do some simulcasts. So it's not really as big of a shift as I think it may seem like from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what I'm sort of curious to know is that presumably you had a team there that was handling your simulcast operation, that was subtitling these shows. You had to do translations and subtitles, and you would push those episodes out and you know, compete for licenses. But that side of the business is not something that you're still handling, correct?
Well, we still have some simulcasts, as I mentioned. So we have, you know, Tales of Zestiria, The Cross from this season. That's a simulcast that, you know, we're actually putting out day and date on our website. In terms of the team, really, we have a production team, and our production team handles all different aspects of production. So they were doing simulcast, but also working on simuldub, subtitling, home video, authoring, and all that other great stuff. So we didn't really have a team that was, well, these are just the people who only work on simulcast or anything.
I understand.
Right. So it really hasn't impacted in terms of like a specific set of people suddenly have nothing to do or anything like that.
I see.
Even on the licensing acquisition side, they're still working very heavily with our Japanese partners to, and working in partnership with Crunchyroll to do all the things that they were still doing. So, yeah. Okay. No one person has really been affected to be like, I don't have a job anymore or something like that. So.
That's impressive. That's very impressive because when that was announced, I think a lot of people's hearts sank just a little bit thinking like, well, I hope this doesn't mean there's going to be a bunch of redundancies or whatever. But it sounds like that didn't happen. So that's really good. So one question I had, though, about workflow, and I heard this echoed a lot when I sent out a call for questions from our listeners, was people wanted to know, like, how exactly are simulcast shows subtitles being produced now? In other words, Funimation had employees that would translate and subtitle simulcast shows. Are they still – you said you're still doing that for a few things, but by and large, the majority of that work is being done at Crunchyroll. Are Funimation Blu-rays of shows that are simulcast on Crunchyroll going to use Crunchyroll's subtitles?
So we, I'm not sure if fans were necessarily aware of this, but the subtitles that we used on our simulcasts were never exactly the same subtitles that we used for home video. There's there are changes that happen, you know, in an additional QC process. So that's really what's happening here. I think we can't really make a blanket statement on that, but just on a case by case basis, we're looking at all of the subtitles and what's going to be on the home video release may or may not be different.
Okay, and basically what it sounds like is that you will occasionally source subtitles from Crunchyroll, but everything that goes through Funimation goes through Funimation's QC.
I'm not even sure, to be honest.
Or if you won't.
I'm not even sure how much it's sourced. I'm sorry, I'm not on the production side.
No problem. I know it's a really pedantic question. It's okay, I understand.
Yeah, it's not my department, so I don't really know. So I don't want to say the wrong thing.
No, it makes sense. Your answer makes sense. It's not really something you can nail down with a blanket statement that applies to everything. It makes sense. So I wanted to talk about simuldubs because that is obviously that's what you're pushing the most now. That is generally what Funimation flexes their marketing muscle behind are those simuldubs. And so I wanted to know how much, like, in a given day, how much staff is required to get the sheer number, like how many shows are you simuldubbing this season, and what kind of staff is required to make that happen?
So, I mean, on that side, we're doing, I believe, 18 this season, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And we definitely have ramped up our production staff to facilitate a lot of the increase in production. But we've done that, honestly, prior to even right now, prior to this year. And the thing that's interesting is, you know, we've had a lot of people who've been contracted. We've had a lot of people who work at the company. And, you know, all of us really contribute to working on these simuldubs in some form or fashion. And so, you know, while it's hard to say there's a specific number that you would need for that, because we all kind of do multiple jobs and we all do a lot of different things. So, I mean, just to paint a picture, you have your voice actors, obviously, who are, you know, contract and come in to do the shows. You've got your voice directors, and most of those have been brought on staff and some are contract to do different things. Engineers, you know, doing the actual physical recording, and the writers, as well as, I guess you could say, a lot of other technical jobs like time coding and things like that all encompass that. And I think you just scale up for the amount of hours that each show needs, and you scale down if you need to, like, depending. And a lot of people are contract for that reason. So we're really just keeping operations, you know, super busy, but all of us are contributing to this, and it's really hard to say the number that it takes to get it done.
Oh, yeah.
Point.
No, we don't need an exact number. But, I mean, you've been there for 9 years. Congratulations, by the way.
thanks.
So you must at least have noticed, like, there must be a substantially larger number of people in the building who are there to dub stuff.
Yeah, so we actually have, I believe, 9 studios.
Yeah, wow.
And that's, we've always had those. They're just being used more frequently now. Mm-hmm. We actually have two shifts. We have the morning shift and the night shift recording, and so they're just pretty much operating additionally. And so, yeah, there's definitely a lot more people, a lot more actors are coming in and out because there's just a lot of work to go around, and it's really great. And it's cool to see that kind of community thriving, especially from a talent side. Dallas has crazily become like this huge hub for voice acting in across the, you know, the United States. So you see, I personally have met a lot of, you know, the newer actors and stuff who've moved here specifically to do that.
Wow.
So it's interesting to be able to see that, you know, from the days of earlier on where you were just getting local actors who weren't familiar with anime, and maybe, you know, you're getting people who are in theater and stuff like that, to now where people come and seek out Funimation and seek out Dallas to have voice acting as part of their acting career, which is interesting.
Right. That's it's sort of an unintended side effect, is that you've built an acting community in Dallas. that's interesting. How are titles selected for simuldub, and do the negotiations, like, in other words, do you have to commit to an English dub before you have the ability to determine whether or not that show is going to be worth investing in?
So the process for selecting a title for simuldub really isn't any different from how it's been when we were doing simulcast specifically. Really what we do is we're really just reactive to fan tastes and what shows have been successful on streaming and home video previously. Mm. So that's not really changed. Obviously, if something is doing really well in previous seasons, where we're seeing that, you know, a certain title is doing very well on home video, then we say, okay, well, something that has a lot of similarity to that, that's what we really want to pursue for a simuldub as well. In terms of commitment for a simuldub, I'm trying to understand the question. So your question is, if we get a title, then we are you asking, like, are we automatically simuldubbing it?
Yeah, but, well, basically, like, you look at the season and picked 18 shows that you're going to dub. Mm-hmm. How did you come up to those 18?
Okay, yes. Again, that's pretty similar. Like I said, it's pretty similar to the process that we took to select the titles that we would choose for simulcast. And it's just finding things that are similar to things that were successful. And so, yes, we do choose those for simuldub. I'm trying to think of how else to elaborate on this a little bit more.
I think in regards to specific titles, if you're getting selected, quote unquote, I mean, there's a lot of different factors that come into play.
Right.
You know, one, I think a big part that people don't think about as much is materials and how you receive those. And that can definitely impact on how things happen. But yeah, a lot of it's just really based off of, you know, the general knowledge that our acquisitions team has done and researching from working with our Japanese partners to, you know, gauging the you know, the manga, previous sales of similar titles and all that stuff. And every title is really unique in that sense as well, too. So you can't overgeneralize either.
Yeah, you can't overgeneralize. I guess what I would say is that, you know, our system is pretty good because if we see people are continuously showing up for the same types of shows, then they tend to do the same for future ones. So it may seem very daunting to have to choose titles when you haven't even seen a single episode of it. And I think that really was the case a long time ago. Well, maybe not even a long time ago, but just previously. But because, you know, we've been doing this for so many seasons already just from simulcast, that process has really already been in place. So we feel like we have a pretty good system of figuring out what types of titles are going to be successful just because of past history.
Right. It makes sense. So speaking to that, there are a handful of titles that I sort of wanted to highlight here as based on our observations, they didn't find an audience during their streaming while they were simulcasting. Shows like Laughing Under the Clouds, Mikigurui School Suite, In Search of the Lost Future. They wound up getting dubbed. They were simuldubbed and released on Blu-ray anyway. And I was curious how those wound up performing, and if that was sort of like, that's kind of the release that I'm interested in. Is like, well, you invested in a dub for this. Did that pan out? Is this the risk that we're seeing?
Okay. Actually, In Search of the Lost Future didn't get simuldub. That one was released just with a sub.
Gotcha.
For Laughing Under the Clouds and Mikagura School Suite, those were simuldubs. So, you know, we decided to do a simuldub before we had seen a single episode of them. Laughing Under the Clouds, well, early on with a lot of these simuldubs, we were choosing titles where we had partners that were interested in trying something out. So Laughing Under the Clouds was one of our earliest ones. Actually, the stream for that one didn't do that badly. It actually did pretty well.
Hmm.
Yeah, I, I don't know if, I guess not many people were talking about it online necessarily, but if I'm remembering correctly, the numbers for that were not terrible at all.
Cool.
I think they were better than our expectations even. Hmm. So with something like that, though, really, when it comes down to choosing titles or evaluating how something does, there are some kind of titles that do better on streaming, and there are some titles that do better on Blu-ray. And since we're – or Blu-ray and DVD, I should say. And since we're really trying to reach as many fans as possible in the ways that they like to consume content, if something is either one of those types of titles, that doesn't necessarily bother us. We're just trying to find titles that will resonate with somebody and get purchased by them or get viewed by them in a way that they'll keep coming back for similar content.
Right. Okay. That totally makes sense. Following that, though, if say like you simuldub something and it tanks, like the numbers are not there for it, does that prevent an eventual home video release? Or if you've invested in an English dub, does it always make sense to just put it out on physical media anyway?
Well, it's definitely always our intention to pursue physical media for any title that we do a simuldub for.
Right.
Like I said, there's going to be an audience for these shows somewhere. And if something doesn't do well on streaming, we have found that there are some cases where something didn't stream very well and it did very well on home video. So we definitely don't want to cross that out just because of the simulcast, or I should say simuldub. I'm sorry. I keep going back to simulcast, but just because the stream didn't do very well.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Curious. It sounds like this is all relatively low risk. Like you can roll the dice on this stuff, but it sounds like it's fairly predictable and you have it pretty well worked out in terms of like what's going to go and what's not.
Yeah, I'd say so. Again, because we've been doing simulcast, I'm actually saying it correctly this time, we've been doing simulcast for several seasons, so we have pretty good knowledge of what kinds of things people like to show up for. So, exceptions. There are some things that surprise us, but I would say it's not super common where something just blows something out of the water in either direction.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is for, us as Funimation, one of our big goals has been to do a large amount of content for a lot of different types of people. Mm-hmm. And so, that risk factor isn't as great for us in certain instances because we do have a wide variety of different titles that we're trying to release. Mm-hmm. And so if something doesn't do that well in one particular area, it might do better here, but we can always balance that out with, it's worth at the very least, the data. And that's the thing that we've been talking about a lot is seeing how things have performed in the past and how audiences have been receptive to it. And the only way that you can get that information is by doing it sometimes. And so sometimes that's worth it one way or another.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I want to mention, we have 18 simulcasts this season. It's not really possible. Simuldubs, oh my gosh. It's not really possible for us to have 18, like for there to really be 18 huge hit shows season. Like, we know that that's not going to be the case. But that doesn't mean that we still don't want to get them because audiences who like some of those shows that may not be as popular, they definitely add up and they matter, and those shows still do matter.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
They're usually my favorites, too.
Right. I understand that. What would you say is more crucial to a show's bottom line at this point? Streaming performance, like how well it does on streaming, or disc sales? Like, what's more important to Funimation?
Yeah, I think the answer is still pretty much the same. There's not really one metric that is more important than another one. Just because, again, we do intentionally seek out a lot of shows that we think will do better on streaming than home video and in the flip side on home video than streaming. And of course, there's also digital download, legal digital download, like iTunes and things like that, that we need to consider as well. It's not really something where you would say, well, something, one of these is better than the other. When we're trying to build out, let's say a roster of 18 shows or something like that for a season, we want to make sure that we're hitting a lot of different audiences and not just serving the exact same type of show 18 times. So because of that, we really need to pursue both of them.
Yeah, and I think from, again, our perspective, when you're talking about the bottom line, Funimation's bottom line is very broad.
Right.
Unlike some other people, we have a lot of different revenue streams, and so that could be merchandise, that could be licensing,
Could
be, streaming. So every a show could apply to the bottom line in so many different ways. And sometimes one show would be phenomenal in one and not the others, and you never know.
Right. Yeah, you're definitely exploiting all those different avenues. I mean, at this point, you know, I can't walk into a store without seeing a wall of Funimation licensed products in there. That stuff is everywhere now. It's pretty
crazy
impressive.
To go to Hot Topic now.
Yeah.
Because I remember Hot Topic, like, growing up in, like, high school and stuff, and going in there now, it's an anime store.
It sure is. It's like a third anime. It's very impressive. You know, yeah. I mean, when I was a teenager, all I did was buy clothes for the goth club there. And now it's all anime stuff. I'd have been delighted when I was 17.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about theatrical, because that seems like it is a renewed focus for Funimation recently. Like, we're seeing you're pushing a lot of theatrical projects. Tell us what did the best for you in 2016.
Sure. So 2016, number one was definitely Shin Godzilla.
Okay.
That one, I don't remember the box office off the top of my head. I think it was like 2.1 point something.
I'm trying to remember.
In terms of millions mm-hmm. of dollars. So that was absolutely phenomenal. Boy and the Beast also did really great for us. And again, that was the type of theatrical run that, you know, plays for multiple days as opposed to one to three screenings. So that one also did well. Psycho-Pass was one that stood out for us, as well as the Rurouni Kenshin trilogy, which that release was a little bit unconventional. We did 3 months, one right after the other. And so, you know, movie one, and then next month movie two, next month movie three. That was really, I think, the best way to do it, so that you know, you leave the theater and you're immediately thinking, oh, I really want to see the next one. So yeah, that was also a really big one for us.
Cool. Yeah, what tell us a little bit about working on Shin Godzilla, because that it was you know, you've done plenty of live action stuff, plenty of live action theatrical releases, but that one is a little bit of, it's a bigger deal. Like, I had conversations with people who don't watch anime at all about Shin Godzilla, and they went and saw your screenings of it. In terms of engaging the press, engaging the audience, how was that film different for you?
That one definitely was different. We had to take a little bit of a different approach. You know, and we had to actually open up to a lot of different types of press outlets that we don't conventionally use. A lot of, I mean, even horror and a lot of course, the kaiju monster genre people. Mm-hmm. But it was much more of a mainstream title because, I mean, everybody knows who Godzilla is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges, actually, was that everyone was recognizing the title as Godzilla Resurrection, which was... Or Resurgence?
Resurgence, yeah.
Which was tough, and this is just me personally, when I'm doing social media, I'd be like, no, it's Shin Godzilla. Like, what's the official title? Talk about it as Shin Godzilla. And I had to keep, like, I was like correcting people, but reiterating that it's Shin Godzilla. But that was really cool to work on, and we luckily have worked with the team that from Japan, working with Toho and stuff on that. So we did... you know, Attack on Titan, live actions with them as well. So that was a good workflow. But yeah, when it came to like New York Comic Con this year, for example, being a more mass pop culture con, it resonated very well. And that was cool to be able to take, you know, this big property that's been, of course, turned into American movies. And it's been forever known as like these cult classics in Japan. And being a genuinely like good social commentary movie as well, I think played up that very well, especially with the times. So it was a different experience, and you know, I've been, again, like I was saying, in almost 9 years in this anime game, we haven't done something like this that whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. I was talking to one of those other journalists actually I think it was at your press conference for your name, and he was telling me, he's like, yeah, I saw Shin Godzilla, and like, you know, I liked it, but I don't really understand Japanese politics well enough, I don't think. And I was like, well, if you do, it's you know, it's got a good message. If you understand Japanese politics, it's got a pretty good message. But yeah, so that's cool. I'm glad that was such a big deal. Did you ever have the opportunity, or was there ever like, hey, maybe Anno will come to the States to help promote this.
Were some discussions. I think there was actually some conflicts in scheduling and some health issues and some other stuff potentially that prevented that from happening. But there definitely were discussions, and I mean, it would have been amazing.
Yeah.
I would have freaked out if that happened.
Maybe when Eva 4 comes out, you can bring him over for that one. When, right? That's what if.
We want to know, too.
Not if, when. we've talked about Shin Godzilla, but what specifically do you think are the challenges involved in marketing theatrical anime specifically?
Yeah, this is a good question. So basically, what's different about theatrical anime versus doing home video? One thing with theatrical is that everything is very geographically focused, geographically oriented. And I think that's not a very, cool, sexy answer necessarily.
Right, yeah.
But we're in these specific cities and specific theaters and things like that. So we really need to drive fans to show up to them and for, a very specific time period, which is, just like a couple days, like a 3-day exhibition or whatever it is. Whereas if you're selling something home video, you can kind of just plaster it everywhere and it kind of goes for a long time. You don't really have to drive them to a specific place at a specific time on a specific day. Mm-hmm. So we've been learning a lot about how to do that. And I think we've gotten a very good system just from doing it over several theatrical releases. But yeah, I think that's probably the biggest difference between what we're doing in theatrical versus home video.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, one of the challenges is that, we can't be in every theater at every time. And so even though we have a extremely passionate fan base that wants to activate on something like this,
right,
sometimes they just can't. And that's frustrating. And I understand that. It's frustrating for a fan who wants to do something. And it's frustrating for us sometimes because we can't activate the same on our end. But I think as we continue to build this awareness of anime in movie theaters and getting people into the theaters and convincing, I think a lot of people don't realize a lot of it is up to the theatrical vendor chains, exhibitors, to determine how many theaters or which theaters are going to be able to show this movie and how long it's going to stay in their theater. And for us as a community of anime fans, to show the support for these titles really increases the chances of more anime in theaters in the future because they... A normal theater chain doesn't know what Psycho Pass might be, but if he saw that Ghost in the Shell did really well and that was his anime title, when Psycho Pass, movie 3 comes out, that's not a real thing, guys, sure. By the way. Yeah.
You're going to get questions at every panel.
They'll be like, I remember this performed and he had a bunch of cool, and that's the thing, anime fans come to theater with full force. That's when that happens, they remember. When Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F happened, all of these theater chains remember when Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F happened, because that was an overwhelming response.
Right.
And the people there weren't just there to watch a movie. They were there to make an event. And the more and more we do that together, not just us as Funimation, but as an anime community with everybody, the more likely it is for these bigger theatrical runs to happen. I mean, Ghost in the Shell live action is a great example of us being able to leverage that Hollywood reach and to make anime more of a thing here.
Yeah, and I guess I do want to say, theatrical anime, having anime in theaters has gone a long way in the past couple of years, as I'm sure everyone else is noticing. But really, it's getting to the point that, there are a lot of other companies that are putting out anime movies in theaters as well, and it's all feeding on each other. All of that, if you show up to one of them, you're going to be benefiting this landscape in general, and it means more anime, a higher chance of more anime from other distributors as well.
Right. Yeah, it totally makes sense. I feel like I'm crossing my fingers and just sitting here biting my lip, because it feels like that Ghost in the Shell movie is going to actually be good. And if it's actually good, that's great for everybody. That's just spectacular news. If that movie is good and performs well at the box office, Yeah, like yeah. We all want that. So I'm crossing my fingers. You guys must be too. But I noticed that, you know, you guys have a theatrical event for the animated, the original 95 one. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened? Because that's a Lionsgate license, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one, again, you said it's being handled by Lionsgate, and our theatrical team talked with them, and again, with the live action movie coming out, with also our release of Ghost in the Shell Innocence,
right,
it's coming out home video. It's Ghost in the Shell time right now. And so, you know, they as a distributor wanted to, you know, bring Ghost in the Shell back, but they know that us as Funimation can help activate this fan base.
Right. Makes sense.
And have this limited theatrical run. And we've, again, shown that we can do this, that we have the established audience and know how to reach these people that would see this. So they recognize that and wanted to work with us.
Well, that's a really fascinating boutique business, basically doing individual marketing campaigns for being able to get the audience in the theater for anime makes you mm-hmm. the most desirable location to distribute a film like that. So what we need you to do is get in touch with Sony and try and get them to let you show those Satoshi Kon movies in theaters.
Oh my gosh.
Again. That's what we need you to do. I bet you could fill theaters for Perfect Blue, like, no problem. I bet you could do that, no problem. All right, let's go ahead and get to our Twitter questions here. We got a few of them. Speaking of theatrical, Vincenzo wants to know if we can expect a wider-than-usual release for Your Name, given its pedigree.
A wider-than-usual? Well, I think I can go ahead and say, because I think there's been, I think it's not been very, very clear, but Your Name is actually not going to be an event style release. So I think some people heard, oh, Your Name is coming out April 7th, and they're like, oh, it's a one day showing. What?
Oh, it's just a release.
It's going to be, again, that type of release. Where it's in theaters for at least a week and there are multiple screenings, so that fans will be able to, you know, they watch it, they tell all their friends, hey, you should go watch this movie, and then there's actually opportunity to watch it afterwards.
Yeah.
So yes, in that way, it is going to be wider than normal, just in terms of like pure number of showings for it. And of course, with this type of release, if it's more successful, if more people show up in that, especially in that first weekend, then the film run becomes longer. It's up to the theaters. But if that happens, then you'll be able to see it stay in theaters for longer mm-hmm. and longer. In Japan, it's still running.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're starting to do like new screenings of it as well. So, you know, we're really hoping that that's the case, but a lot of that's going to also just depend on who ends up showing up for it in the first weekend.
I want to reiterate what Jennifer was saying there about watching it on the first weekend. I think a lot of fans don't realize how important it is to support a theatrical release early in the release. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not up to us as a distributor right now to determine how long it'll be in these theaters for this specific type of run or how many showings it'll get. It's up to the exhibitors to see how it's doing and performing and then increase those amount of theaters if they see the demand or, unfortunately, on the other end, pull it out. So I wouldn't wait to watch the last day of the theatrical run, quote-unquote, because that day might not happen for one thing, or that might, if all goes really well, that day could be pushed out to months later. Who knows?
And one other thing I want to bring up about Your Name is, you know, we've had a lot of theatrical movies where we're putting out in one language. So One Piece Film Gold was in English. Shin Godzilla is Japanese only. For Your Name, it's going to have both language options, sub and dub. So you'll be able to watch it both. And that's really going to allow us to reach out to both kinds of audiences, especially for a film like Your Name. There's a really good split of people who want to watch it in their preferred language. Of course, I don't think we've mentioned yet, but the English version also has those new songs that were recorded by the original artists, Radwimps. So, you know, if you've seen the subtitled version through, you know, Los Angeles or anything else, then there's another way that you can watch it with new content that hasn't mm-hmm. actually been released before.
Yeah, it's really cool. And if you guys are having questions about which theater or which version is showing in your theater, We're going to do our best as Funimation to let you know, but I would definitely check with the theater and inquire with them directly to make sure that is the version that you are sub or dub that you want to see.
Okay, that's cool. So in other words, you look at your local listings, and there might be show times for both a dub and a sub version. And if you want one or the other, call your theater.
Yep.
And let them know. Yeah, I'm excited to see the English version of that. My pals Mike Sinner Nicholas and Stephanie Shea dubbed that, and I was at the subtitle premiere with Shinkai there. And I thought it was going to be dubbed, but it was subtitles. And afterward, I went to Mike and I was like, "You had to dub that. Like you had to get those emotions out of yourself. Like it's a very emotional movie with like a lot of acting in it. So yeah."
Like, without spoiling it, if you guys don't know the premise of the story, Stephanie and Michael had to direct each other as their respective characters for reasons.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's fun. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing, and I didn't know Radwimps recorded new songs for it. So that's super exciting. Awesome. All right. I'm excited. I'm excited to be able to tell people, go to the theater. It's playing right now. Go watch it. That's what I'm excited about. Muscle Robo wants to know, and we got a lot of questions about this. What is the deal with Speed Racer? Went up on Amazon briefly and then it was taken down. And it was announced 18 months ago and nothing.
I actually don't know the person.
I don't know
that
100%. Yeah, it's not Jennifer's brand, so she's not even involved on it. I don't think we've had any official information. It is something we are talking about and working on, though I don't have any concrete info quite yet.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Sit tight then.
Yeah.
It's still coming.
It should
though.
Be cool.
It's still coming. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
We got similar questions on, we always get the same questions about your Bandai titles that were announced however many eons ago. People still really want to know about Outlaw Star and Crest of the Stars. I assume you can give me no updates on either of those.
Other than they will be coming at some point, honestly. I think that it has changed a little bit since I think the last time that we talked. We put out Code Geass, we put out Escaflowne,
right.
So we are starting to get some materials for some shows, not all of them. So at the very least, those are trickling in, and we should expect updates to be coming. I just don't have an exact street date for either of those yet.
But stay tuned.
And related to that, we had already announced Code Geass Akita the Exiled is coming out this year.
Yes.
Right.
That's the for people who may not be aware, that's the OVA movie length OVA series. So it's like five OVAs, each one's 50 minutes. So it's like 250 minutes. So it's pretty good. And it's a side story that takes place in the Code Geass universe between seasons 1 and 2. And a lot of the original Code Geass characters show up in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen that. I've seen the entire original show. I didn't know. I was like, well, wait, how do they do more of that show? But I guess it's...
there's even more coming.
Right, yeah, no. Of course, it's a stupid question. How could they do more? Yeah, it's a stupid question. go ahead.
I think the latest of the Bandai stuff, Wolf's Rain...
Yes.
Yeah, that's coming out this month. So, I mean, stuff's being worked on, and we're making progress.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I'm happy that's available. I think my favorite show ever, Wolf's Rain. That finally showed up just the other day. Jacob's working on a review of it. We'll have that up next week. I'm excited about that. Let's see here. Okay, so speaking of Code Geass and Escaflowne, we did get a lot of questions about the problems with those releases. Specifically, let's talk about Escaflowne first and the Kickstarter. So what all did you learn from that Kickstarter, and what were the biggest challenges involved in it?
So definitely, this is the first time that we had done a Kickstarter. There were things that just didn't go wrong. Go the way that we wanted to, especially in the fulfillment. We had a fulfillment house, and it turns out that sending product in the way that we would for shop is pretty different from doing it from a Kickstarter, very specific, very complex pack out standpoint. I'm not trying to, I don't really know if I'm trying to justify the way that it turned out. That's definitely not what we wanted to happen. In terms of what we learned from it, well, honestly, we're not this is a very specific instance. I think that fans who have purchased stuff from Funimation shop directly, where the fulfillment was done a little bit differently, probably know that that's a very different experience from what happened there. So I don't really anticipate that something like that would occur again, just because, again, that packout was very, very complex and things were specific in a way that we're not really expecting to see again.
Right. I mean, well, there were a lot of complaints about the materials issues in that thing where, the people complaining about the pendant and, like, you know, peeling stickers and stuff like that and just a lot of little problems. So what you're saying is that those were all sort of endemic to that one project and that moving forward, we should not expect to have that many issues again.
Yeah, I would say so. Just because, again, there's a very high variation of different products that came out with this Kickstarter release because, you know, it's not just here is a home video release that has discs in it. It was a lot of different combinations of ways that somebody could receive rewards. I don't want to go into it too much because it wasn't really us, but the fulfillment house that we used for it is not the same as what we used for Funimation Shop.
Okay. Right. I think that was obvious. And that seemed very obvious to me. So the other release that we got a lot of QC questions about was Code Geass, which went out with some disk problems. And then I guess people are now having trouble with the replacement program where they're not getting the right disks or they're getting DVDs instead of Blu-rays. Can you address those concerns?
Sure. So with that, we did have a problem in the QC process. There was an error with the audio that we didn't catch. But since then, we've made some pretty major changes just to our QC process to make sure that what happened in that case, which was had to do with the audio channels, that we now have a process in place that we'll be catching that much more rigorously than we had before. In terms of replacement discs, if people can contact Funimation, product concerns at Funimation.com, mm-hmm. We have a staff there that is aware of the issues. And I think that at that point, it's going to be sorted out on a single case basis. So if there's issue with getting the right discs or anything like that, feel free to email them and I think they should be able to sort it out.
we got a few people asking how Yuri Kuma performed for you.
I don't actually remember. I'm sorry. I actually didn't look up the numbers for that one. I don't really know off the top of my head.
Didn't really stand out though, it sounds like.
Since you usually ask us what the top performers are, I'm usually looking at the top fourth of that list, I guess. So I didn't see Yuri Kuma on that, unfortunately. But okay.
Did poorly or right. or not to expectations.
I guess what we're saying is it didn't do as well as Attack on Titan live action. So
sure, what a letdown.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, unfortunately.
I'm sure you expected it to be your top seller.
if you want to ask us next time, then I can actually look it up.
Sure, yeah, sorry about that. Megazone 23 Part 2 wants to know, why are the subtitles in the new version of your app in the style of closed captions? I noticed this myself. It makes it hard to read.
I'm actually not sure what that is.
So, the new app, we are going through some tweaks and adjustments. Sure. We've been working with Sony DADC to really launch all that new stuff. And a lot of this they've developed, Sony DADC has, and, one of the challenges that's been the case is, you know, anime is handled so much differently mm-hmm. than most forms of entertainment.
Right.
And so those are a lot of little, like, I don't want to say little things because they're not little, they're important. They're really important things for our audience that aren't as important for other forms of media. And I think that's all things we're looking into and adjusting and tweaking as we continue to move on. Really, I'm glad that we're able to, me personally, I'm glad that it's up and site has been launched and I can do more things with it. And now we can make changes and right. do stuff. Because we were kind of in a holding pattern for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we're at this point now where we can really take fan feedback and make the best tweaks and improvements possible. We definitely welcome all the feedback.
And if anyone wants to drop a line for suggestions or bugs or anything like that, definitely contact support at Funimation.com, or if it's a product specific one, product concerns. You know, of course, Justin and everyone else on the team is looking at what we see on social media all the time, but that's really going through that process is really the best way to getting making sure that whatever message you have goes to the right people.
And it's, and I don't know if you guys have noticed, but we have opened up our social channels to have help specific accounts. We have Funimation Help on Twitter at Funimation Help, and then we also have a Funimation Help Facebook page. So if you're already in those ecosystems and you're if you're a frequent tweeter and all you do want to do is send a tweet, definitely direct it at Funimation Help, and rather than the normal Funimation handles, if it's an immediate problem that you need something addressed, that'll make it easier because there's just so much other stuff to filter through.
So medical emergencies, you're saying that's people should get.
please contact your...
Jose asks, why have you stopped putting recent films on iTunes? Recent films like The New Ghost in the Shell and Boy and the Beast are not available.
Sometimes we just have different rights for different things. I don't know off the top of my head which ones we do and don't, but I believe that generally films there's less allowance from licensors to put those up in general, just because streaming is sort of seen as similar to TV broadcast and movies are, you know, sort of a different thing. So I don't know if I could speak in terms of those two specifically, but that is, I think, a trend that we have in just our license agreements.
Are there any titles that have sold noticeably better percentage-wise in Canada than in the U.S.?
Oh, this one I don't know at all, unfortunately.
No? Yeah, okay, that's all right.
We personally don't have broken out numbers.
Yeah, sure. That's okay.
I'm very curious about that,
too. That's a good question, though. I do like that question.
Yeah. Next time.
Especially when, theatrically as well is another interesting way to take that, too. So good to know. Yeah. I'd like to find that out myself.
All right, cool. Firkwin Root wants to know, pass your name in April. Well, I mean, obviously, I don't think you're going to announce anything on this show here, but are there going to be, I know that's probably your big one for the early part of the year, but can we expect other big theatrical events this year?
I think it's a possibility. We don't have any titles signed yet for anything past there, but of course, nowadays Japan, there are so many new anime movies coming out, and also you know, more live action anime movies after Attack on Titan and Rurouni Kenshin, which I have to say are were, I don't want to say tests because that's not true, but you know, there were things that we were like, well, this is something we have not really done much of before, and those both did really, really well. So maybe that might mean that there's a possibility. I don't know for sure, but yeah, we don't have a definite, but I think it is there's a likelihood that
I think another thing to look out for, and this is again not something that's necessarily happening, but I personally would like to see, you know, we're doing this Ghost in the Shell movie with the original animated film with Lionsgate, but I feel like there is now this want for, you know, nostalgia or tent poles of the anime industry and film to be re-released in theaters. And I go to the Alamo Drafthouse all the time. That's my favorite theater to go to personally. And they show a bunch of, you know, older movies. I went to the Back to the Future trilogy screening, you know, like,
right.
I like those types of events. I think the audience is ready for that too.
Yeah, totally. Definitely. I was just thinking you guys should do the Bebop movie. it's another license, but you know,
yeah.
Another thing you got to go through Sony for, I think. The Big On Anime wants to know, why do you use full color disc art only on your limited edition releases instead of on all of your releases like you used to?
Oh, I guess I haven't really noticed that as a trend.
If you buy standard Escaflowne, the discs are just blue. And if you buy limited Escaflowne, the discs have nice art on them.
Okay, in that case, that was a specific thing with a collector's edition. And in that case, for Escaflowne, we wanted to make that collector's edition just really nice. But you know, I'm trying to think of another example, but I'm pretty sure that for most of our other limited editions, we've been using the same discs for both.
I think so too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's That's been
he didn't cite any other examples.
I think he's talking about stuff like Seraph of the End, you know, where there is like a big box and the discs in the standard edition and the little thin one that, you know, winds up in Best Buy or whatever, the art on those discs is different. I honestly, like, I wish I had another example right off the top of my head, but the one that I have is that one very specific example. So this could be something else, but
There are also some cases where, you know, we might do something in one color just because, you know, it's a little cooler. Like, well, Wolf's Rain, I think, is a really good example of that one. Because Wolf's Rain, if you look at the disc art for it, there's a line drawing animation of a wolf running. And so, you know, it really had to be one color. But I think that makes it, like, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a stylistic choice on some of those, which we actually released a GIF of it, of all the discs, like, sequentially, so it's really cool. Like, I don't think we've done that before, where you put all of them together and it's an animation.
It is pretty cool. Brankle Bergson wants to know if you have any thoughts on Amazon, their recent moves into the streaming market, and sort of the Amazon and Netflix presence in the anime space.
So I think that, you know, the launch of Amazon Anime Strike and the fact that Netflix is getting more titles like Little Witch Academia, et cetera, really shows that, you know, this is probably just goes without saying, but the bubble that burst in 2006-ish, that's obviously not a thing anymore.
Right.
Anime's really made such a resurgence. We're seeing, you know, attendance at conventions is up. More anime is coming on television. A lot of the manga companies, their sales have been going up and up year after year. So really, I think that that's all just symptomatic of, we're in a growth pattern again. Any time that some genre, you know, if a company like Netflix or Amazon is seeing stuff like that grow, then of course they're getting interested in it and want to see how they can monetize off of it as well. So,
right.
I guess what I'm saying is I think that it is a sign of a really good thing, a sign of, you know, how I think that, you know, speaking a little bit personally, when I was in high school, I was very paranoid that someday there would be no anime because I read too many horror stories about how everything is going down. I probably read too much Anime News Network, honestly. Like, I just immersed myself in all this industry stuff, and then I was like, oh no, what am I gonna do when I'm 60 and I have nothing to watch? I think that these past couple of years are that's not a thing that's gonna happen. So.
Right. Yeah.
Personal.
I mean, I think anime, more people, more companies getting interested in anime just means that there's going to be more anime for all of us, and I'm okay with that.
Right. All right. Also from Branko Bergson, this is an interesting question. I guess I'm sort of asking for your opinion on this. Do Japanese anime producers take feedback from American partners like Funimation seriously when they're developing and marketing projects? I would imagine they do if you're on the production committee.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Something like Dimension W. Even aside from that, when, we are always in communication with Japanese licensors, of course, and they look at, and they ask us for how shows are doing in terms of streaming performance. And of course, they will know about, home video performance and things like that, and they ask us a lot of times, you know, what's the fan perception, what are people saying online, and a lot of times we're compiling that information, we're looking at things like Twitter or Facebook or comments on ANN threads, especially the ones where you guys do the reviews of episodes, and so that stuff is definitely being communicated back to Japanese committees, Japanese producers, and everyone else that has a stake in it, you know, as the license holders.
Right.
And I think that's something that fans probably weren't super aware of, but yeah.
Right. Corey Barnes wants to know, so Akibus Strip got a simuldub that was day and date. It premiered with a simuldub. Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened and whether or not that's something we might see more of moving forward?
So that's definitely something that we want to make more of a thing just going forward. Obviously the first sort of as I guess what you would say, zero delay simuldub would be Space Dandy, of course. Mm-hmm. With Occupus Strip, we have a very good partner in Gonzo who's very interested in seeing, you know, what can we do to make anime more visible, more successful in America and overseas and everything like that. And having a partner like that is phenomenal. It's night and day difference in terms of trying to get these things out faster. But really what's happening at this point, you know, previously when we've been doing some of those for a while, and previously it was a 4-week delay. So anime comes out one day and then you'll get the simul dub of that 4 weeks later. I think it was what, like 2 seasons ago, something
cut it down to two weeks, right, our simul dub.
We started doing a couple that were just cutting down to 2 weeks, and since then we've been, you know, learning a lot of that process, figuring out how to cut that down and still maintain really high quality. And we're getting to the point that you know it's becoming more and more possible. Mm-hmm. So of course a lot of that really is going to rely on partners, because you know, if a studio is taking their finished product to the networks 2 hours before broadcast in Japan, then a day and date simulcast isn't going to happen. But you know, when things like Occupus Strip are successful, then the committees will take note of that and then may make it easier for us to have a similar situation for other titles. So I think the dream that we're really, that we are actively trying to pursue is zero delay simuldub mm-hmm. for all of our simuldub titles in a season.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a big change, not just for the US. Like, I think it's even a bigger change for the production in Japan to be able to make that happen. And the fact that the U.S. is influencing those decisions in Japan at these companies to make happen is an amazing thing for anime, and it says a lot about our anime community in the U.S. And how, again, when we were, you know, in past days where the U.S. was kind of an afterthought and we just took content from Japan and showed it off here, now we're working very closely to produce this kind of worldwide content, and I think that's an interesting place to be in as an anime fan.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for it because I don't have the stats in front of me, but you know, there's an annual report that goes out just on like the state of the worldwide anime industry, and I believe that the last year's report was really saying how international licensing is taking a really big part of that pie nowadays. You know, you do domestic Blu-ray and DVD sales in Japan, you have merchandise and everything like that, but international licensing based off of both streaming and home video is really growing in that area.
Okay. All right.
And where the money goes is where people are going to start making those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's an interesting question. Branko Bergson also wants to know, are simulcast anime eligible for the Emmys, and will Funimation submit them for nomination?
That is a really interesting question. I do not know that.
I don't know what Emmy qualifications are, yeah, to be honest.
Well,
I
mean, like, the way the Emmys work, Funimation would have to submit shows as a studio, and then all of you would have to be voting members of the Hollywood, I believe, whichever voting body votes on the Emmys, Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, I think. And then all of you vote for your own shows, and then they, like, that's how HBO wins all that stuff. Like, that's how the Emmys work. So
yeah,
it would be a little tough, I think.
Emmy, yeah, we have one Emmy award winning anime, which is Afro Samurai,
right?
And so that was shown on Spike and all that. So I'm assuming that's how that all got eligible and all that business. But yeah, I mean, it's happened.
You want to figure that out?
That's cool.
All right, let's see. What was the reason for the dub of Mob Psycho being delayed?
So that one was dubbed actually out of our studio. Not in our studio is what I meant to say. So that wasn't a dub from Funimation. That was actually worked on in California.
Right.
And that was a title that was part of the Crunchyroll deal where they had it simulcast. And that was probably the earliest point of our partnership.
And
so that dub was actually completed in a different studio, and so it didn't fit our same timelines.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. okay. So for whatever reason, I am getting lots of questions now asking about a 4-3 release of Dragon Ball Z. I think that's the latest crusade. Yet another release of Dragon Ball that is in 4-3 television aspect ratio. Yeah.
That.
The not widescreen.
No information on that.
Yeah,
no?
I don't think we don't have any plans for it at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. All right. And obligatory, we get this every time. Actually, I think I'm going to go ahead and end on this one. Tatami Galaxy. every single time we get asked about this. And hey, at this point, you could do a Kickstarter, right?
I'm pointing at Jen on this one.
Don't point at me.
You're the Kickstarter expert here,
oh,
quote unquote.
No.
Couldn't you?
You know what? Akka's really cool.
What?
I'm just talking about other shows that are like that.
Anyway,
I hate to say this answer again, but you know, if we see similar shows perform very well, then things were more likely. I don't know what the case is for Tatami Galaxy. I actually am not brand manager on it, so yeah. I don't know what rights we do or don't actually have. So I know that there are some titles that we had, you know, where we may have only had streaming rights. And don't quote me. I mean, you're quoting me on this anyway, right? But like,
sure.
I don't know if Tatami Galaxy is a case like that. It might have been. But if you want shows that are more like Tatami Galaxy to get home video releases, the easiest way to message that is if we see sales of something similar.
So I said, support Akka as it's coming out.
Yeah.
Well, so you had a show by the same director that was eaten up by the same audience, which was Ping Pong. But I suspect perhaps sales on that were not where they needed to be.
Ping Pong did not perform on the same level as Attack on Titan live action.
Okay.
If that I think answers your question. But,
I am stunned.
You know, I don't actually know what the sales for Ping Pong were off the top of my head. Again, I wasn't really working on it. But, you know, if whoever is working on it, if something like that does well, and again, I don't know what the case for Tatami Galaxy is because I don't know what rights we do or don't have on it. But if you see something, if we see something like that, you know, especially if it's something where, as I said, you know, we sort of predict how things are going to do ahead of time. If something blows all of those predictions out of the water, then we definitely pay attention to it. And we think, oh, well, there's definitely an audience for this type of content. And we pursue more of that kind of stuff going forward.
Right. Okay. All right. Actually, I think that just about wraps us up. Can't thank you guys enough for coming here and submitting yourselves to this kind of grueling. I know it's arduous.
Oh, no, it's fun.
No, we're good.
Fantastic. Okay, guys. Well, again, thank you so much. And we'll be in touch. We'll do this again.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for having
Thanks
us.
For us.
All right. Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Justin and Jennifer for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music. Leave us a rating, a little review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see y'all next week.